Our fight, Christian, is not against flesh and blood. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thank you for joining me. You are listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. I'm Dr. Fred, your host for the next few minutes, and we're continuing our study in what we call Behind the Enemy Lines. Now, as noted, and I've mentioned this numerous times throughout this series as well as others, the plain fact of the matter is that according to the Bible, things do not go from bad to good to better and to best. They go from bad to worse, then absolutely terrible, and then wonderful. The good, quote unquote, the wonderful, only happens because Jesus returns to this earth and destroys the Antichrist and his minions. Now, I've written about what Jesus refers to as birth pangs in other books. The End of the Ages, it's a commentary on the book of Revelation, and Living in the Last Generation, which is a commentary on the Olivet Discourse. And I've touched on them briefly in this series as well. Now, in those other books, I detailed the birth pangs with charts and numerous scripture references. And before I go any further, let me just say that all of my books are available free of charge as downloadable PDFs, and you can find them by going to www.studygrowknow.com. And again, once you get there, you just click on Books, All, on the menu from the left, and you'll see a page with all of my covers of my books. Click on each individual book, and then in the lower left-hand corner, you'll see a little icon for the book cover as well as a PDF, and there you can download the book free of charge. Of course, the books are still able to be purchased in actual hard, you know, soft cover, hard copies, but if you can't afford them for any reason or you just prefer to have them stored on your computer or you can print them out later, you can download them free of charge as PDFs. There's no obligation. You don't need to give me any information. You don't have to sign up for anything. You just click on the link and it opens up. If you have problems with them, just shoot me an email at studygrowknow@hotmail.com and I'll make sure the link is fixed. Now, in those books, I detail these birth pangs with charts and numerous scripture references, the birth pangs that Jesus speaks of in his Olivet Discourse found in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 are evidences of how bad things will get prior to the start of the tribulation period. Now, once the tribulation period begins, life on planet Earth will become extremely unbearable for most people. It's not an indication that good things are going to happen. It's very clear from Scripture that very bad things will occur before Jesus returns to begin to set things right and establish his millennial reign of 1,000 years. Now, without going into great detail here, note that the birth pangs leading up to the start of the tribulation are as follows. Number one, nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. This is basically a Jewish idiom, meaning total conflict in the area in view. And in this case, Jesus is referring to a global conflict, something that affects the entire world at the same time. Well, that's a world war, and that occurred with World War I, Matthew 24, 1 through 8, Luke 21, 20 through 24, and Isaiah 19, 1 through 4. That's the first birth pang. And again, there are nine. The second one is Israel, a nation. This occurred in 1948 when Israel once again regained her independence. Ezekiel 34, 11 through 31, Isaiah 11, 11 through 12, 6. Now, I want to make a quick note about the nation of Israel. What we have today is not the remnant. It is not the final remnant of believing Jews. What we have today is the nation of Israel that the Lord resurrected. And from this nation, he will pull his final remnant. And then the third birth pang is Jerusalem United. This actually occurred at the end of the Six-Day War of 1967, and that, of course, was not prophesied in Scripture, the war itself. but it wasn't predicted in Scripture, but the result of it was, with all of Jerusalem becoming united under Israel's sovereignty. And this is the way things are today on paper, in spite of the fact that the Arabs have been allowed to continue to control the Temple Mount. You can reference that in Daniel 9:27, Matthew 24:15, and also 2 Thessalonians 2. 3 through 4. The fourth birth pang is the northern invasion of Israel. This is yet future, and it is disclosed to us in Ezekiel 38:1 through 39, verse 16. The fifth birth pang is a one world government. This is clearly highlighted in Daniel 7:23 through 24. The world will become one, just as Satan attempted to do in Genesis 11 with the event known as the Tower of Babel under the leadership or dictatorship of Nimrod. Satan will be allowed to actually succeed this time at bringing the entire world together. The sixth birth pang is the Ten Kingdom stage. And once the world coalesces into a one world government, breaking it down into 10 manageable parts will be the next stage, and this stage will continue into the tribulation period, and you can reference Daniel 7:24, the first part of that verse. And then the seventh birth pang is the rise of the Antichrist. It's interesting to note that the individual Paul refers to as the man of sin in his second letter to the Thessalonians will make his move once the world is broken into 10 sections. Why now? Well, he'll be able to see who he needs to overcome in order to rise to the top of the heap. And the reference for that is Daniel 7, the second portion of verse 24, among other places. And then the eighth birth pang is false peace and security. There will be a time of false peace and false security. It will seem like there's peace and security in the world. People will believe that things are finally coming together. But of course, that's not going to hold up. It merely gives the Antichrist time to move things forward while everyone thinks that things are fine. And for more on that, you can go to 1 Thessalonians 5. Verses 1 through 3. And then the ninth birth pang, the one that actually starts the tribulation period, that's foretold to us in Daniel 9:27. And this is the signature event that begins the tribulation, as I mentioned. Once Israel enters into this agreement for peace with neighboring Arab nations, the people of Israel will literally have signed an agreement that effectively sells their souls to the devil, because the Antichrist will be the one who brokers, or at least has some part in bringing that peace covenant to fruition. God's patience comes to an end, and the seven-sealed book of Revelation 5 is open. You know, there is nothing in the previous 9 points, with the possible exception of the eighth birth pang, the false peace and security, that indicates anything other than the fact that life on planet Earth moves from bad to worse. We can see how things are ramping up now as they move toward the beginnings of what the Bible describes as the tribulation and great tribulation. Now, even before Israel became a nation in 1948, the world was never, ever at peace. With the events of World War I and World War II, we know that the world had done everything it could to eradicate Jews. And it wasn't simply Jews that experienced a Holocaust. There were many ethnicities that experienced their own Holocaust at the hands of other ethnicities. But in the case of the Jews, Hitler killed over 6 million of them. And while most everyone realizes this, according to the Bible, we seemed destined to repeat it, this time with Antichrist leading the charge. Hitler was a type of Antichrist, but not the Antichrist. Now, with the rise of Islam, anti-Semitism has grown exponentially throughout the world. Movements against Israel have developed to a crescendo of late, with a good deal of hate speech being spoken. Many more even deny that the Holocaust actually occurred, but prefer to believe instead that it was merely a carefully crafted lie promulgated by Israel to gain the world's pity. Well, the truth of the matter is that things are getting worse, whether it's politics, wars and rumors of wars, nations rising against nations, the weather, social unrest, continued ethnic cleansing, or what have you. Things in many portions of the world are becoming unbearable, and there appears to be little to no relief. Those who say that the world is getting better are fooling themselves. Evil will reign until the end. 2 Timothy 3:13 states this very clearly. Paul says this, quote, "But evil men and impostors will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived." If this is what existed in Paul's day, and he was able to realize that this would mark global society as time marched onward toward the end, how much more corrupt, deceived, and deceitful have men and women become in today's society, over 2,000 years removed, or roughly 2,000 years removed from Paul? And more than that, if, as Paul states in Ephesians 6:12, our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual entities in the heavenly realms, why are so many within Christendom acting as if our war is against flesh and blood? Why do we take the time to stand against other people and corporations who do what they do because of the fallen spiritual entities behind these flesh and blood faces? Now, Paul tells us clearly that we are not in a battle against people, but in fact, we are in a spiritual battle against fallen angels in order to rescue people from the kingdom of darkness. Then why do we tend to see other people as our enemies? Because they are physically right in front of us, and it is them that we see. We don't see the spiritual beings who are motivating those particular human beings. There seems to be a fine line between wanting justice in the world and fighting against evil, quote-unquote, corporations and people to achieve that purpose. If you're aware of a need in someone's life, you are obligated, as a Christian, to at least attempt to meet that need as you're able. This is the meaning of the parable of the Good Samaritan, Luke 10:25-37, and also 1 John 3:17-18, where John comments on that same type of attitude that needs to be on display in the life of the Christian. In that parable, the Good Samaritan, we note that a man was attacked, robbed, beaten, and left for dead on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho. First, a priest comes along, saw the man, and deliberately passes by on the other side of the road. He offered no help at all. Second, a Levi came along, and upon seeing the beaten man lying on the side of the road, also chose to pass him on the other side, leaving a wide berth. Finally, a looked down upon Samaritan happened along this same road. But instead of ignoring the man, he made a deliberate attempt to help him. The Samaritan took the man to the nearest inn. There he asked the innkeeper to take care of the man and nurse him back to health. The Samaritan paid the innkeeper, promising that on his way back through, he would square accounts with him if the money he provided then was not enough to cover the expenses of the injured man. Now, this is a perfect example of what God expects us to do as we travel through this life. As we see a need, we are to do our best to meet that need. And I've got to confess here. Maybe you have to confess, too. I've not always done that. Ultimately, every person has the exact same need, though, and they need salvation. Sometimes we need to alleviate physical needs before a person is ready and able to hear about their spiritual needs. However, many within the church today go much further and believe that, for instance, protesting our government, either local, state, or federal, in attempting to change situations for people is the right thing to do. Frankly, I don't see where peaceful protesting comes into play for the Christian when we're dealing with corporations and people who do things that we believe are unjust. I don't see an example of organized protesting in the scriptures, except from people who were enemies of Christ and enemies of the cross. Now, once we begin to protest, we are actually pitting ourselves against other human beings. I'm wondering if instead of using our time to organize protests and boycotts, which wind up placing us squarely against other people, if we took the time to pray about these situations, entering into the spiritual battle there, what such spiritual activity might result in? Would it bring about change in individuals? Would it open doors for us to present the gospel? Again, though, what are we hoping to change? Do we believe that if we can create a society that appears to be in line with our definition of Christianity, then we will be able to lean back on our haunches, believing that we have accomplished some measure of good in society? Folks, our battle is not against flesh and blood. It is against the spiritual entities in the heavenly realms who war against us and war against God. Well, that's our show for today. I thank you for joining me. And we'll continue in this series. Until next time, may God open your eyes to show you how blessed you truly are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.